as everybody know.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Most of the people I worked with in the community were poor. They lived in relative poverty, which means that the kids didn't have a very strong education. Therefore, they didn't speak English very well, and we worked with translators quite often.
In the interior, you have more minors. You have commercial sex workers, which are, you know, prostitutes, commercial sex workers. You have young people, which who, like, from school, like, there's nothing else to do, so they get straight into mining from school. They start mining from school. And we say they're at a higher risk of contracting HIV, because most times you find in these parts there's a lack of education. You know, people not there to offer this service yet. Like, you challenge Guyana has been offering this service in some communities, but then there are other communities which do not have access to this service. And we believe that to reduce the risk of contracting HIV in Guyana, we must educate the population. And not just educate them, but we need to give them the skills which are necessary to use the information that they have.
They didn't have a lot of schooling. They didn't have a lot of life skills. And by life skills, the things we kind of take for granted, just proper hygiene, proper respect for others, you know, not hitting as a form of discipline or fighting with other kids, proper nutrition. They didn't really have the luxury of eating the four different food groups in a day. So that was a barrier, in that when you're dealing with people living in poverty, it's not always easy to give a workshop or a lesson or a class when their belly's empty and attention is not as attentive as you might like.
You need to, you know, want to do this. It must be something, you must be driven by it. Because it's only then, I think, that you can really appreciate that, you know, it's reality and it's there, and you wouldn't stigmatize and discriminate people living with HIV and AIDS. Because in these countries, I don't know in those countries, but in these countries, like, when people are found to be HIV positive, you know, people tend to stigmatize them and discriminate a lot. And people working in the HIV arena shouldn't be doing that. Like, we should be there to support. We should be there to help them. We should be there to guide them and ensure that, you know, they feel like a part of the society too, and that they're not, you know, left out in the cold. They're not left on their own. You know, we should be there with them.
People were very curious about wanting to know what we did. And most people were familiar with ukimwi, the Swahili word for HIV, AIDS.
There is some amount of stigma attached to you too, as a worker in the HIV AIDS field, right? People, you know, tend to believe that because you are working in the HIV arena, you also are infected with HIV.
We weren't always met with the same warmth and unbiased attention. Sometimes people in the community would sort of go, oh, I see, you're working with ukimwi, HIV. Yeah, I wonder if that means, you know, you have HIV.
And this is something that we got to deal with on a regular basis, because when we go out into the community, people see the vehicle coming and they're like, hey, you know, those are the AIDS people. And somebody might be listening and say, oh, maybe they're infected with HIV too. And lots of times, like, in sessions, like, when we facilitate workshops, people would ask, are you infected with HIV? And they're like, you know, why are you doing this, you know? But most times, they want to ask that question because they think too that you are infected. You're infected. You want to do something about it.
Spending time in Tanzania with local people, whether they had a university degree or whether they'd never finished primary school, some people were so inspiring because they were taking the initiative to form clubs, groups, meetings with other community members to try and break out of the stigma or the stereotype that they were as poor people.
But I remember once I was doing a session, and we were talking about getting counseled and tested for HIV and why we should and why we shouldn't. And we were like, you know, everybody should know their status, because if we know our status, then it makes it better for us, because we can do something about it, right? We can have access to treatment. We can have access to counseling and support services.
At the youth center, the youth I worked with, we noticed that the girls were trying to form an alliance, and we really encouraged that, because getting more female participation and empowerment to females is key. So they were trying to initiate a sort of club within themselves where they would talk about issues together and write to a Tanzanian magazine called Femina, which it's for both men and women readers, but it's an emphasis on females.
After the session had finished, you know, this girl, she came to me and she told me that she wanted to talk with me. And I said, okay, and we found somewhere privately we can talk. And she told me that, you know, she is scared that she has HIV because her boyfriend died of HIV, but she, you know, she had never, like, she was too scared to go do the test on her own. And now that, you know, I was talking and I spoke about it during the session, she felt that, you know, she needs to do the test, and she sees that, you know, there is hope and that she can live her life even if she comes back negative or positive.
The legal aid department of Faraja that we worked with dealt with the majority women who had been widowed by their HIV-infected husbands or had been abandoned by them for the most part, and they sought legal advice because they were probably being compromised by the dead husband's family who was trying to repossess the house where the wife lived, or trying to take what little savings she had or the business that her husband had owned. So the woman was being shoved onto the street with her children, now starving and not able to afford to send them to school.
Right. So in the end, she said, you know, she wants to do the test, and if I can accompany her to go do the test. And I was like, why not? I can do that. But then only if you want me to, because the HIV test is a confidential process. And if you want to do it, the only way I can, you know, be with you is if you let that counselor know that I can come along. And she wanted me to go, and we went, and she did the test.
Within the legal aid department, with these widows and abused women, that they were taking the initiative to form a group together where they would come every month and talk and share their stories and share their advice with each other and lean on each other for support and impart more wisdom and further the awareness and education.
The test did come back positive. But, you know, she told me, she's like, Michael, even though I'm positive now, I know I can live a positive, healthy lifestyle, even though I'm HIV positive now. And she was like, you know, I thank you for, you know, bringing me to this point where I can, you know, feel this way in doing an HIV test.